This is episode 2 of Everyday Wellness, Fertility Lessons from a True Renaissance Woman with Sarah Russell, Nutritional Therapy Practitioner. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, Clinical Health Psychologist, here with my co-host Cynthia Thurlow, Functional Nutritionist and Nurse Practitioner. Let's get started. Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today.
Hello, hello. Well, we are really excited today to have the very esteemed Renaissance woman, Sarah Russell, as our podcast interviewee today. And she is not only a colleague of ours, but truly, and I use this term and I mean it with true sincerity, a true Renaissance woman. She has such a breadth of experience and background, and her focus within her own clinical practice is on fertility and female hormonal health. But she has a really rich background, which I'll let her delve into. She actually lives in Italy, which sounds wondrously romantic to me right now, as opposed to living in hot, steamy Northern Virginia. But welcome, Sarah. We're so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. And thank you to both you and Kelly for inviting me to this wonderful and exciting podcast. And thank you so much for the beautiful introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I would love for you to share more about your background, because I feel like that in and of itself has really influenced your area of focus, you know, not only personally, but also professionally.
Sure. Yeah. So actually, I came to nutrition actually from an original standpoint of really experiencing hunger and poverty as a young kid. We lived in Tehran for a few years in the late 1970s, and we were kind of stuck there during and after the revolution broke out, because my brother was born right at the beginning of all that chaos, and he was not healthy enough for us to just up and leave when things got bad. So we ended up leaving all our possessions behind and starting our life over, basically with both my parents jobless and three small kids and very little money for food. And I spent basically my whole preschool years with the experience of hunger, and basically building all my interpersonal relationships around the hope that the person that I was making friends with, whether adult or kid or, you know, no matter who it was, would give me something to eat. And then we moved to the Tuscan countryside when I was 7, and that was an amazing experience because food grew from the ground, and and I fell in love with foraging, in particular with wild herbs, mushrooms, and rose hips and other interesting berries like blackberries. And I spent some time just gathering stuff from the woods and learning all about different herbs and which mushrooms could be eaten and which shouldn't be. I'm still alive, so I guess I did a good job. And right. So and really just fell in love with food and nutrition and the concept of abundance. And then when I was 14, and living in the middle of the Nevada desert, I thought, okay, I'm going to be a nutritionist when I grow up. So I went to the nearest library and looked for nutrition books. And sadly, I don't know if it was the library collection or if it was just the late 1980s, early 1990s. It was 91, I think. Nonetheless, sadly, all the nutrition books were about megadosing on synthetic multivitamins. And I was like, oh, that's not what I want to do. So I ended up becoming a nerdy academic instead, and then discovered that there are actually food-based nutritional training programs, not before getting my PhD in Italian Renaissance literature. So I went from studying consent versus coercion, to sex and marriage in the medieval and early modern Italian fictional tradition and in canon law, nonetheless, to working on complex health cases, including in particular fertility, pregnancy, and complex health cases in general in adults and children.
That is quite the story.
Yeah.
I know, right?
What was it about fertility that made you so interested? What made you want to specialize in that area?
You know, it's so interesting because a lot of people assume that because that was the area that got me so excited about signing up for a nutritional training program, that I probably had a struggle with it. I like to joke that it's that fertility challenges are basically almost one of the few health problems I've never had. I'm lucky enough to have three kids, and it was when I was at home recovering from a C-section, which I had because I had a full placenta previa with my last pregnancy. My son is now almost seven, and I was at home with him, and finally had the time to read the book Nourishing Traditions that my acupuncturist had recommended to me when I was in the last year of writing my dissertation. And I remember I had opened the introduction and I was like, no, this book is going to change my life. I can't read it right now. Mm-hmm. I have to finish my dissertation. So when I was at home with Gregorio, this was a couple years after I had opened and closed the book, I started reading it again. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's such a blessing, you know, to be here with, you know, with this beautiful baby and to have, you know, what health I do have and to have at least some access to, you know, good real food here in Berkeley, where the food culture is so vibrant. And I thought it would be just so wonderful to give this, the gift of nutritional knowledge to other people, especially people who are just struggling mm-hmm. with a desire to have a healthy child and haven't attained that.
It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's interesting how you lived in different parts of the world and how that so strongly influenced you. I think when you said to me that, or you said earlier, just talking about, you know, when you moved to Italy, to Tuscany, and it was fascinating for you to be able to eat things that grew out of the earth. You know, did you have any formal training as a child, or you just probably taught yourself as you went?
So, you know, my dad, he was a very interesting man. He was a poet, but he had a biology and a botany background. He was basically a naturalist at heart, even though he was a modernist poet. And he saw that I was passionate about nature and about, you know, herbs. And he taught me a lot. He knew a lot about medicinal herbs. I remember him feeding me abundant portions of stinging nettle when every time I would have any kind of respiratory or allergic afflictions. And I also remember him encouraging me to bring home things like rose hips and just various wild aromatic herbs that I would find in the woods. And he would always get excited about it. And I felt so rewarded and appreciated by his enthusiasm and encouragement.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a wonderful bonding experience to go through with your father, you know, as you're each teaching one another. I know, you know, through our work together, sometimes we collaborate. I have a book that I need to start reading that you recommended to me about, you know, herbology. And it's fascinating, especially because of my Western medicine training. It's always very humbling to me to recognize that there are things now in nature that I come across that can be equally, if not even more profoundly powerful than things that are created in a lab. So I applaud you for continuing to share that information because it inspires others, you know, including myself, to think beyond the proverbial Western medicine box, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks, Cynthia. I'm so happy to hear that you're inspired to go down this direction. I think it's so exciting and really rewarding.
No, it definitely is. And do you feel that it's, you know, after you finished your NTA training and you started, you know, working in the nutritional space, was it clear to you that you were going to work, you know, predominantly focusing on female hormonal function and disruption? I mean, were those things that you intrinsically knew you were going to gravitate towards, or did that kind of organically evolve for you?
So I actually signed up for the Nutritional Therapy Association training program really with this deep desire to work in this area. And it's so interesting because a couple of years ago, I opened up the file with my original letter where I applied, and I basically explained my vision, and it was really, it gave me goosebumps because everything I said I wanted to do, that was exactly what I was doing 3 years later. I'm now 5 years out of graduating, and I'm just, I feel just so excited. And it's really interesting because I went into NTA wanting to focus on female hormonal health and, you know, especially preconception, pregnancy, of course, you know, the preconception and fertility area, both from a balanced male plus female perspective, but also, you know, young babies and the health of young children, from a bigger picture perspective, obviously, because it's always in context, right? But it's so interesting because my initial year and a half in practice, I was slightly frustrated because I wasn't really getting enough from my perspective, people who fell into this niche area that I had initially defined for myself. And then I really started realizing after a few months that it was wonderful to have such a diverse clientele come to me. And what I ended up doing was circling back to fertility, preconception, pregnancy, and young children from the perspective of someone with very broad experience with people with all kinds of health problems, and how that general and diversified experience in my nutritional therapy practice has really informed my fertility work, because it's really about not just the type of problems a person comes to you with, but about individualizing the work with every single person, no matter what their health concern is.
I loved what you had on your website related to that. You're talking about looking at the individual, and you focus a lot on addressing the root causes. And the first one you listed on your website was stress, which I definitely resonated with. As a psychologist, I see this all the time in my practice. So I'm wondering if you could just take us down the road and tell us how you've seen stress impact this in different individuals.
Yeah, I mean, we are under so many kinds of stress. And the first thing that I tell people when I give them a nutritional plan is a nutrition, obviously lifestyle plan as well. I always tell them, look, don't take this too seriously. Because if you start looking at this as, you know, must and mustn't, then you will be so stressed that you won't enjoy the food that you're eating. So we always have to contextualize everything. And so that's one example. You know, even just striving to do all the right things can ultimately become a source of its own source of stress in a way, and its own obstacle to healing. So I really do try to make that the very first thing that I talk to every single client about. Improved nutrition really is not just about improving what you eat, but including your relationship with all the kinds of layers of health. If you can't really digest your food and absorb your nutrients if you're super stressed, as many people are. So I always really try to emphasize that piece of it, because I don't want my nutritional guidance to be another layer of stress in an already stressed person's life. So what we try to do, obviously I come to the let's talk about stress side of things, not from a psychological perspective, as you can do, which is a wonderful way to integrate with nutritional therapy, but more from a general, you know, we're all people, we all have some kind of stress in our lives perspective. So many types of stress that I see are, you know, that quest for perfection type of stress. But also overworking, not sleeping well enough, not eating enough, or, you know, obviously on the other end of the spectrum, kind of comfort eating, or, you know, rewarding and punishing yourself with, you know, by treating yourself or taking away foods or, you know, those kinds of things. And also the stress that comes to us from exposures to toxic stress, exposures to pathogens, exposures to imbalanced gut flora. So things that are going wrong, you know, from a microbial perspective. And also the stress that comes to us, obviously, from not sleeping enough, which is such a problem today. And I would add to that the stress of overuse of technological devices. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are not unplugging enough in today's world. I say this as a little bit of a Luddite, even though I have a remote nutritional therapy practice, so I could not function professionally without technology. But at the same time, I don't have a smartphone. I don't have a tablet. My internet is wired. It just stays in one place, and I'm confined to specific hours, basically, for using internet. So I find that to me a great liberation from a stress that I see being really endemic in today's society. I think that we really kind of, as a society, stress ourselves with the expectation of being available to others all the time and not having enough time for reflection or even relationships. I think that our relationships ultimately are being really stressed by these pressures.
Oh, I so agree with you. It's interesting. My segment that I did this morning was talking about, you know, that everyone on TV wants it to be something that's sensational. So it's sleep hacks is what they wanted. But there was a whole, you know, there was a section on nutrition and there was a section on technology. And I was saying, you know, we're in an overly stimulated environment. So that completely resonates with everything that you're saying. And it's interesting, you know, Brian Hoyer, who's part of our tribe too, he talks about ancestral health and ancestral living. And the more that you recognize that our lives are so largely overrun by electronic devices, even though we try our darndest, it's just so easy to get trapped in that. It's almost like a hamster wheel. Even explaining to clients that, you know, the longer I do this, the more I recognize I need to take more time away from electronics, because once you get that blue light, you know, that junk light, you know, infiltration in your life, it's, you know, you're not connecting with nature, having opportunities to connect with others because you're looking at a device. You know, we're guilty of that. We're certainly not perfect, but it's interesting how you look generationally. You know, my parents' generation, or I should say my father's generation, because my mother was pretty high up in information technology, but you know, my father's generation, when they left their job, they left their job at the end of the day. Nowadays, that's not the case. Yeah. People are feeling obligated and connected and accessible. And that's a huge stressor. I have clients who will occasionally text me at odd hours or send me emails at odd hours. And I see it, but I'm choosing not to respond to it because I think it's detrimental for me and for them. It's that, you know, constant instant gratification, all those dopamine releases in the brain, which we know are, you know, creating a cycle of, even for adults, where people are addicted to technology. So I think that's a really important distinction about another stressor that certainly will, you know, hardwire our brains to not be at their best, primed and ready to be doing the kinds of activities we should be doing.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, even as someone who doesn't have a smartphone, I do realize that I spend more time on my computer than I probably should. I'm always trying to optimize my work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually really excited to say that I'm moving from having a home office to not having internet at home anymore, which is how we were in Berkeley. It's just that we're moving now to a place that's close enough to a town that I'm going to be in a co-working space with an internet connection. And I'm going to have my working hours and then that's it. And it feels so liberating and so exciting.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Nutrisense. It combines cutting-edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, Nutrisense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, Nutrisense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I've used through Nutrisense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit Nutrisense.io/EWP and use the code EWP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients. I've been using MitoPure for the last 2 years, and I've added this to my routine for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a foundational supplement for me and my family. It keeps things simple, and I know that I cannot get enough of urolithin A in my food to derive the same benefits. And if you're not familiarized with urolithin A, it's a signaling molecule, but it's also actively involved in anti-aging, energy production. And I take Timeline because of its remarkable healthy aging solution that activates key critical cellular pathways in my body. It's a total game changer for healthy aging. I alternate between using the soft gels and powder, depending on whether or not I'm traveling. And we know that restoring cellular energy is a key to enduring health. And this is concluded in a recent publication in Nature Metabolism, which is a top scientific journal, identifying that newly energized cells may provide many more years of healthy life to people. Yet as we age, we know that cellular energy production naturally declines and reduces our prospects of optimal health and longevity. That's the great thing about Timeline, is you can restore cellular energy and support healthy aging. I've noticed the biggest improvements in my energy and sleep levels. We know that Timeline is clinically shown to give our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria, new power. And when taken daily, it replaces aging mitochondria, so it upregulates mitophagy and rebuilds new ones, or mitogenesis. Timeline is the only nutrient that can do what it does. So Timeline renews your cells to a more powerful state. My listeners can get 10% off your first order at timeline.com/Cynthia. That's 10% off at timeline.com/Cynthia. I know you're going to love this product.
I think exciting and terrifying at the same time. And for me, I just think, oh my gosh, that's fantastic. And I should aspire to that. But oh my gosh, that's terrifying. It's that, you know, that fear of missing out. They call it FOMO. You know, everyone's concerned that if they take 10 steps away, that suddenly they're going to miss out, but they won't be missing out because they're going to actually be creating, you know, the relationships and the connections with their loved ones, the people that really matter, as opposed to the kind of faux social media realm that exists. Kelly, do you see much of that in your practice with your own clients?
Definitely. And I think being connected all of the time poses other problems too. The fear of missing out, and also the deep comparisons that people do based on the highlight reels that are posted on things like Facebook and Instagram, where you only see the beautiful pictures of the meals and the perfectly dressed, well-behaved children. It's not a reality, but oftentimes when people aren't feeling well physically, emotionally, or mentally, it's much easier to make a comparison from a place of lack. So showing that you don't have those things when all of these other people have so much going on in their lives. And, you know, Sarah, I'm wondering, given your worldly travels, if you see both in your clients and just in the culture, how being less connected like you are now and are going to be in your next move, how that influences health in general and maybe even hormonal health in particular.
Yeah, so I definitely see that the younger, kind of more connected generations, and I have to say that Italians are definitely, if anything, more, you know, quote unquote, connected and attached to their technological devices than Americans are, if anything. And yeah, I mean, I definitely see the younger generations in particular being kind of sabotaged in many ways, both in their physical, emotional, and interpersonal health from, you know, from these influences and from these unhealthy attachments with, you know, with these devices. And as you were saying, very rightly, the pressure of comparison and the desire to emulate the perfection and the, you know, this, I'm showing you the best parts of my life, so you will assume that this is how I always live. Mm-hmm. You know, my children are always clean and smiling, and my food is always perfectly plated, and the light is always shining, you know. That's not really anybody's life. But I do think that definitely, you know, not only from a neurotransmitter and electromagnetic frequencies perspective, which is definitely a huge, huge deal. I'm so glad that you mentioned our colleague, Brian Hoyer, Cynthia, because I really, really like his work a lot. But also, it's important to keep in mind that there really isn't any large research in terms of how all of these things affect different parts of our life and interact with different things. Now, coming from the perspective of mercury research, there have been some really important studies that document the fact that electromagnetic frequency exposure is positively correlated with a higher and faster rate of off-gassing of elemental mercury from people's amalgam fillings. So, and this is associated obviously in turn with a lot of health problems. Now, I'm sure that it's not just an issue for people who have some kind of low dose chronic mercury exposure or accumulation in their bodies, which by the way, even people without amalgam fillings usually have. But it's also other things that the EMFs are interacting with. I mean, we have a very complex and also very delicate system of biochemical regulation, which includes, among other things, our hormonal balance. And we're really underestimating, I think, the potential for technology and especially these high exposures to increasingly heavy doses of electromagnetic frequencies to imbalance our health, you know, from a hormonal perspective and also from a digestive and, you know, every single functional area of health could be included. But, you know, one of my big concerns with pregnancy is obviously, you know, beginning with preconception, so many different issues can come up. I mean, I could really talk for hours about this, but, you know, sometimes when couples are struggling to conceive, a lot of the time the husband has a secret porn addiction. And this is not something that I overtly address because for many different reasons, often the wife doesn't even know about it, but I've worked with couples for long enough to be able to see, oh my gosh, this is an issue. Maybe I should just, you know, tack on a just-in-case list of resources to the handouts, you know, very among many other different types of resources, and just let the guy take it in and not feel humiliated or stigmatized or, you know, in some way identified as a problem, but giving him the resources, should he admit to himself, okay, this is an issue for me. Oftentimes then, you know, that in combination with better nutrition, better lifestyle, going to bed earlier, unplugging from devices, all of these things contribute to a healthier intimacy within the couple and makes it a lot, you know, removes a lot of stress from the couple's life so that they it is easier for them to conceive a baby. But again, you know, even just telling women how important it is not to carry around a cell phone in their bra.
Who does that, by the way? I'm like, I hear that and I'm just like, that would be the last place I would think to carry my phone. Maybe that's just because I'm weird. But when I hear that, I'm always like, really? I get it. The men have it in their pockets, but I don't get it having it in your bra. Like that would be the last place I would think to put my phone. But again, that could just be my own quirkiness.
It's amazing how many women carry their cell phone in their bra. I've never done it personally, but
yeah, amazing. You know,
but you know, even pregnant women with their belly growing big, you don't want the cell phone to be carried too close to the belly either. And of course, sure, you know, purchasing a shielding cover for cell phones, if one does have a cell phone that is being carried around close to their person, is very important. And of course, not overusing the phone, the smartphone, or other similar devices when one has a newborn that is being frequently held and breastfed. Because of course, you know, one of my big concerns is, you know, we don't want the skin to skin, the eye to eye, the face to face, the smile, that relationship between parent and child to be somehow blocked and shielded and interrupted. You know, shielded in a negative sense, just really interrupted by the presence of this device that has never been in human families ever until now. And it's really a little terrifying when you see, when you see this happen over and over again. And, you know, of course I never judge, people, you know, based on what I see them doing. But I am very concerned for future generations and, you know, our health in general as a society. When I see this happen, and, you know, when I see toddlers playing with their parents' phones just to be entertained and kept, you know, quiet and still, it's scary.
Well, and it's interesting because obviously my children are 10 and 12. So the advent of smartphones really didn't impact parenting for me until the last few years. And I think about, you know, for me, you know, I breastfed both of them and enjoyed it, enjoyed that whole process, enjoyed, you know, when they were toddlers and preschoolers, and I didn't have a smartphone. And I think about lost opportunities. And again, there's no judgment from my perspective because I'm sure other generations look at what had the way that we're raising our children have very strong opinions.
Sure.
But I can appreciate that lost connection, those lost opportunities, not being as present as you could be as a parent, and how that can impact that bond. How do you see, with women that are, you know, childbearing years and beyond, how do you see some of the lifestyle things, choices that people are making? Do you see the same impact on the endocrine system? Because really that's what it comes down to when we're talking about you know, hormonal health in women, it's really the endocrine system is largely what we're really focusing on. How do you see, you know, these technologies and these toxins and things we're exposed to in the environment, how are they impacting people as they head into perimenopause and beyond?
Sure. Well, you know, even, you know, talking about the reproductive years, one of the big a couple of big things that we haven't really talked about are plastics in various forms, and from various sources, including, you know, people who are making such a concerted effort to drink clean spring water, but they're maybe purchasing it you know, those soft plastic bottles that can leach so much endocrine disrupting plastic byproducts into that clean water that they're drinking. So even just helping educate couples as to the importance of sourcing not just what's contained in the container, but also the materials of the container itself. Drinking clean water, not being exposed to the toxicants that are often included in municipal tap water. I am just consistently shocked and appalled. I don't really know why I'm still shocked and appalled after all these years at the difference between the heavy metal levels in hair tests of people who drink tap water versus people who drink spring water. It is absolutely shocking. But we trust so much that, that our tap water is clean, and it isn't. It's full of byproducts from as a person who's allergic to multiple things, I wouldn't drink tap water just because of the antibiotic residues that are likely to be in there. But for men and women of reproductive age, a big concern should be the byproducts of birth control pills, of other pharmaceuticals that can disrupt hormonal balance, of pesticides that are known to be endocrine disruptors, of glyphosate that can wreak havoc on nutritional status in the body, heavy metals such as lead. Lead is a very common toxicant in tap water. And it wreaks havoc on the human endocrine system and really depletes fertility, partly because the body is trying to prevent us from reproducing in such a dangerous state. The list can go on. Of course, fluoride often in many American municipalities is an added chemical, which can definitely be neurotoxic to developing fetuses. So, and of course, such a problem for the fertility of especially women who tend to have a weaker thyroid function, which is a huge barrier to fertility and pregnancy in so many women today.
And I think there's that whole, conventional dogma that we don't question, we just do. And so, much like you mentioned about fluoride in our water or fluoride treatments at the dentist, which is a whole other tangential conversation, just encouraging the people that we work with to ask why something is necessary. I have finally gotten the dentist to stop asking to give the kids fluoride treatments. They finally put a note on the chart. I said, you just don't need to continue asking because my answer isn't going to change. And they were very nice about it, but it was like every 6 months we would have this conversation again. I said, well, it's really not necessary to have this conversation because my answer will be the same as it was 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 18 months ago. Kelly, I know that Kelly lives in a city. I'm in the suburbs. What do you use for drinking water at home, Kelly?
We use a filter on our refrigerator, and we also use filters on our baths and showers too. That was a huge lesson for me when I went through the NTA training. You think about, at least I thought about toxins as coming in through things that I was eating, but I was less aware of the presence of them in the water, like you were talking about, Sarah, and how that can enter your body when you shower every day or when you give your child a bath and they want to play in there for 35 minutes. I mean, it's a huge place for exposure. But I think, the water thing is huge. We are drinking water, should be drinking water throughout the day. So having that as a foundationally healthy source for our bodies is huge. And Sarah, I'm wondering if you can kind of expand on the other things that people are putting into their body and talk about how a nutrient-dense whole foods diet helps with hormone regulation, fertility, preconception.
Sure. Yeah. Another big source of toxicity that can really be such a problem for so many women's fertility is makeup and other cosmetics. So many women don't realize that the toxic substances inside the makeup, which they are often completely unaware of, are entering the circulation via the skin, and that can with the tap water versus filtered water or spring water, I can see the, I can see women who are using, you know, just regular old makeup. I can see the difference between that and cleaner makeup companies or no makeup on a hair test. And it's really shocking, you know, the impact on the hormonal system that just switching your home and body care and cosmetic care regimens can shift overall health and endocrine health. So to answer the second part of your question, a nutrient-dense diet nourishes every aspect of the body and helps build fertility by by providing the building blocks of hormonal balance by nourishing the mother's body and helping, the mother's body feel safe, and fertility is enhanced, of course, when in a situation where the body feels safe and not starved, which means, of course, not just putting in nutrient-dense foods into the body, but also being able to digest the foods properly because you're not stressed as you're eating, you're chewing your food well, and you have any, you know, supplemental digestive support that you may need in that phase of life. By helping nourish the body, you're providing it with the nutrients to help build hormones. Hormones don't just happen on their own. They are nutritionally built, just like neurotransmitters and enzyme systems and pathways. Everything starts with nutrients. And of course, fetal development, building a baby, having a healthy placenta, all of those things that are so important during pregnancy are also very nutritional dependent. So, just switching people, and it's not about the nutrients that are listed on a package of, prenatal vitamins or even on food packages, because just because those nutrients are listed on a bottle does not mean that your body can actually use them in those forms. Just because, a processed food has been fortified with certain nutrients does not mean that those are the forms that your body can use, especially at such a delicate time as preconception, pregnancy, and the, for breast milk production and postpartum recovery. So it really is about going back to foods. It was so funny. I was talking yesterday with someone, just a random.
Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armour colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armour's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins or antibodies that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know the mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armour's colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my Everyday Wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's TRYARMRA.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out. Americans spend an average of 90% of their time indoors and take about 20,000 breaths a day. The indoor air that we breathe is 2 to 5 times more polluted than outdoor air, and in some circumstances, up to 100 times more polluted, according to the EPA. And did you know that air pollution is responsible for nearly 7 million premature deaths globally? So what's the solution? I want to introduce you to a product by Air Doctor that has captured the attention of established media outlets like CNN, ABC, and more. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so that your lungs don't have to. This includes pollutants such as allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses that have the potential to go on and make us sick. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day, breathe easy, money-back guarantee. So if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use code Cynthia. You'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 in value. Look at this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Cynthia. I absolutely love my air filters. They're an integral component to ensuring that the air that my family breathes in our home is as safe as possible.
New acquaintance who was asking me about my job. And when I told him that I was a nutritional therapist, he started talking to me about, you know, oh yeah, I know someone else who sells some powdered supplement products. And I said, that's not what I do. I help people eat food, like real food. And he was like food, like, oh my gosh, that's so interesting. He said, I definitely want to talk to you more about that. And he was just so surprised.
That whole concept of food-like substances. Sorry, I think there's a little bit of a delay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you. But it's that whole war on the food-like substances, things that are considered to be food but are actually more just chemicals than they are actual, plant nutrients or animal nutrients, and how we're, as a society, starting to just accept that that's seemingly very much the norm in our day-to-day existence.
Yeah, definitely. And it just makes such a difference when I see people switch from standard American diet, processed packaged foods, and even just, alongside commercial standard prenatal vitamins to bioavailable prenatal vitamins. It makes a huge, huge difference. I mean, if you're tracking your nutrients, it may not look that different to a software program or an app, but it makes all the difference in the world. I mean, you can see people's hair and skin change in front of your very eyes. You can see, obviously, you can kind of imagine progress in many areas of nutritional therapy, I think, by being optimistic and having a little bit of a placebo effect. But you can't fake that when somebody is infertile or has had miscarriages and then all of a sudden has a healthy baby that they've been able to conceive and bring to term. There's just no more proof to me of the effectiveness of nutritional therapy in the context of, a real food, an individualized nutritional support program in the context of a healthy lifestyle. There's just nothing more rewarding to me than seeing people going from not being able to have a healthy baby to having one. It's just beautiful.
That's such a special time to be involved in someone's life. I don't know if Kelly went through any infertility challenges, but we certainly did. Of course, my eyes are now wide, opened enormously going through our own nutrition training and then really being focused on female hormonal health. But recognizing that years of oral contraceptives were not really helping me in terms of how they masked the issue that I was having.
But having the ability to help someone get pregnant with food as opposed to injectable medications or other type of reproductive therapies is pretty profound. And I'm sure most people would prefer to go that route as opposed to drugs that force your body to do things that it wouldn't otherwise do on its own.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I do sometimes support women who are also, you know, under the care of a reproductive endocrinologist and maybe taking some medications, you know, or even in a couple of cases doing IVF, depending on the person's situation. They may have already decided that's their path, or they may, you know, the advanced maternal age. I've worked with women well into their mid-40s who really did feel like the clock was ticking. And so sometimes it's a supplement and to reproductive endocrinology. And oftentimes it's an alternative. I've worked with couples who had tried IVF and failed and then just took a break from it, did nutritional therapy and got pregnant and have, you know, now 3 and 4 year olds. So it's incredibly rewarding. And yeah.
Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about your practice, what it looks like, and your programs? I know that you have two programs that I saw on your website. One was called Feed Your Fertile Body, and one was called Feed Your Pregnant Body. Can you talk a little bit about those, please?
Yeah. So while my nutritional therapy practice focuses very, very much on individualized nutritional therapy, when I'm working with clients who are going through preconception preparation and through pregnancy, there are certain foundations that are really constants for everyone. So when I developed the fertility program very early on in my practice, basically the first year that I was in practice, I developed the original version of the Future Fertile Body program and had a different name at the time. But I did it essentially to help people supplement their individualized nutritional therapy work focused on their own fertility journey and then their pregnancy journey, which is where the pregnancy program originated. I had to develop that as a follow-up because I was successful enough that people were demanding a pregnancy program as well. Basically, it's a really great way to bring people together in a group setting. I also do sometimes use the programs on a self-paced basis with individual couples that I'm working with. But I find the group setting incredibly powerful and empowering because couples build community and connection and support. And it often happens that that they end up getting pregnant around the same time and having babies around the same time. And it's just so nice for them to have like a real food-based community that they can look to for support. Another thing that I'm really happy about is that these are programs that that other practitioners are using in their practices. So I originally developed these programs for my own clients and then decided that it would be great that other fertility and pregnancy focused practitioners would have access to these materials and not have to kind of reinvent the wheel all over again. So
that's amazing.
And now, yeah, thank you. There are now a few centers that are interested in integrating the fertility program into their curriculum. So that's very exciting and it will create a demand for more instructors in the areas where these centers operate. So that's another very exciting area of work for me to fine-tune and develop.
Now, would that be within the EU or in the United States, Sarah? Or are you not able to? Are you not
so far? So far in the US, I'm working on the on Europe as well. I think it's a little bit of a different demographic, but I'm I'm looking at starting to get booths at conferences in the UK, starting there and just kind of seeing from there what comes out of it. I really think that, you know, given the success rate of the couples that have gone through the fertility program and the happiness of the women who have, you know, and of course, you know, their spouses who have gone through the pregnancy program, the feedback has been really good. I really am so grateful and gratified by the feedback of the women who've gone through the Feed Your Pregnant Body program and who have said that it was really such a great balance of being informative without being scary. Mm-hmm. Because it's a fine line, mm-hmm. you know, you want to inform people so that they're not putting themselves at risk, but pregnancy is such a delicate time and you really don't want to terrify people because that goes back to the stress component that we were talking about earlier. It is not good for a pregnancy for you to be terrified.
Exactly. Well, just thinking about the impact of a growing and developing fetus, if you're releasing all sorts of catecholamines and, you know, tapping into your adrenals, I mean, that's definitely something that'd be detrimental. But I think it's all about balance in all areas of our lives, right? You know, finding that balance for our finding balance if it's ever so elusive in our personal lives. And then Kelly had a really good take on balance in our first podcast we did together, where she said, you know, it's constant fine tuning. It's never as if you achieve balance and it stays there. It's constantly finding this juggling within your personal and professional life to make it work for you and your family.
Definitely. Yeah, that's really well said.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, Sarah, I want to be mindful of your time, especially in light of the fact that you're in the midst of a move, but I can't thank you enough. I know I speak for Kelly and myself for carving out a little bit of time to connect with us as well as our listeners. And can you tell me how listeners can find you, how to reach you outside of this podcast?
Sure. And thank you so much again for having me on the podcast. I can be found at my website, buildnurturerestore.com. And I can be emailed at Sarah with no H at buildnurturerestore.com. No dots or anything between build, nurture, and restore. It's just all attached.
So, you know, it's funny that you mentioned no H because I probably have 20 friends in my sphere that are named Sarah. And at any given day when I'm sending an email, I have to remind myself, is this Sarah with an H or without an H? Just being mindful of, you know, the different spellings that are out there. And certainly there are many. And Sarah is just kind of one of those very classic names. It's multi-generational. So I know lots of Sarahs with different age ranges for sure.
Yeah, it's so funny because in Italy they never put the H on Sarah, but they always forget the second L in my last name.
Oh, interesting. So,
yeah.
Sarah, again, we want to thank you for being here and ask you just one more question that we like to ask all of our podcast guests. So as our name implies, Everyday Wellness, we would like you to share some of your best tips, maybe just two tips for the listeners on what they could do to improve their wellness every day.
Yeah, definitely go to bed, especially for women's hormonal health. The more pre-midnight hours of sleep you get, the better your hormonal health. So obviously, you know, don't go to bed at like 7 p.m. That's a little silly, but go to bed ideally before 10:30 p.m. And get early morning light exposure. So go outside early in the day so that you start to get the light receptors on your skin active for really good hormonal balance and good sleep-wake cycles. Those are my two top tips. I know that they're not food-related, but they will really help you get integrate with nutrition and other good lifestyle strategies so that you're getting a lot more mileage out of your food.
No, I think those are great. And I think, you know, it's interesting even for me. I mean, I'm all about going to bed earlier, but I hadn't thought or considered, I'm usually walking my dogs early in the morning, but how important that is, you know, for hormonal synthesis to get light exposure. And so that's a really good one, even for me, just to kind of remind me, clue me, and that I need to be doing more of that myself.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Cynthia and Kelly. It's been such an honor and pleasure to be on this podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.